Hermosa Brothers International LLC.
Good morning, and may it please the court, Christopher Cutting for the appellant, Hermosa Brothers. May I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal?
2 minutes.
Thank you. The most important thing in this case is that at no time relevant to this case was Hermosa Brothers in unlawful detainer.
Well, let me ask you some questions about the case, and I'll focus your attention on the May 10th, 2016 order. There doesn't seem to be any dispute between the parties that that order is a timely appeal and is properly before us. Do you agree?
I do.
And that order basically awarded attorney's fees to the landlord in this case after the dismissal of the case, correct?
That's correct.
And so basically that's your target for this appeal, correct?
Yes, it is.
If we agree with you that the court erred in awarding attorney's fees, do we need to get to any of the other orders that are designated in the amended notice of appeal?
No, we do not. We would vacate that order, determine a prevailing party, and remand to the trial court for a new determination.
If we disagree with your appeal and conclude that the trial court properly awarded fees to the landlord in the May 10th order, you're making some argument that the April 12th, 2016 order has some effect on that, correct? Or maybe I'm misunderstanding your argument.
It would affect whether the May 10th order was correct. But if this court were to determine that the landlord was correctly ruled as the prevailing party, then the prior order would not have an effect on any other determination. What would remain to be determined would be the appropriateness of the amount of fees.
Well, let me just follow up on the April 12th order. I don't understand why it has any relevance to the question of fees. Can you enlighten me?
In the April 12th order, the court determined that the three-day notice to pay, rent, or vacate was not properly served, that it did not contain appropriate demands for compliance, and that the case was commenced prematurely. Based on those determinations, the landlord could never have prevailed in an unlawful detainer. It is our contention that if when you bring an unlawful detainer that you would never be able to win, that you can never be the prevailing party.
Well, the case law, I believe, is clear that with respect to subject matter jurisdiction, which is conferred by the state constitution, that's not adversely affected by anything the parties did at the April 12th hearing, correct?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. You seem to say in your briefing that because of procedural errors by the landlord, the case should not have proceeded. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
What prejudice did you suffer as a result from any alleged procedural errors by the landlord? Because just saying there were procedural errors doesn't do anything for me. There has to be prejudice.
In enacting the Landlord-Tenant Act, the legislature announced public policy that a tenant should always be provided with at least one opportunity to correct a breach of a lease before consequences could flow from that, before the lease could be terminated, before judgment could be entered. And that's the purpose of a three-day notice to pay, rent, or vacate, or other notices within the statute, to give the tenant that one opportunity to correct the violation. That's the heart, that's the core of all of this state's landlord-tenant law. Tenants have the same obligation under the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act when seeking remedies against
Well, this is a commercial act in a separate chapter.
Yes, so the opportunity to correct the violation before we go to court is a core right of a tenant. Here, they made payment within the compliance deadline for the full amount in the notice. It was rejected, and this case was brought. That's their prejudice. They had to retain an attorney, go to court to defend a case which they had fully exercised their right that the legislature gave them to comply before being brought into court.
If we rule in your favor and conclude that attorney's fees should be awarded to you, what does it matter about having to go to court, as you just explained?
The tenant never should have had to hire an attorney at all.
Well, that may be so, but if you're compensated by a reversal of the order, what difference does it make?
that would correct the problem.
Okay.
The tenant would be made whole. That's the purpose of awarding attorney's fees when a defendant prevails in a case, is for them to be made whole for wrongfully or not, for being charged with an offense which they did not commit, which the court determines they did not commit.
Was it a disputed fact as to the exact amount of rent that was owing?
There was a question as to the exact amount of rent that was owing. On that key day, the tenant brought in a tender. They got the three-day notice, and they went through their records, and they found there were some checks that we paid that were never deposited, never negotiated. We think the correct amount of money owed is this other amount. So early in the day, they brought a check for what they believed was the correct amount of money, tendered it to the landlord. Landlord rejected and returned it the same day. So what they did is they immediately wrote a check for the full amount in that March 21st notice. They tendered it, again, that same day. And that amount was also rejected and returned. It's that second tender, full payment of the amount in the notice within the compliance period, that is sort of the core problem here is the tenant did everything they could possibly do. They took every opportunity the legislature gave them, paid exactly what the landlord's demanding. It was still rejected, and the case was still proceeded forward. We have, in addition to the court's April 12th order making these findings, we have ample evidence in the record that the findings were correct. Even if this court were to not adopt the April 12th order as law of the case, the evidence provided is sufficient to reach the same conclusions de novo today. I think the most significant question to decide is: do we need a new rule on who a prevailing party is, or do we follow one of the existing rules? There are three different cases with variations of the rule for determining the prevailing party that have all been put forward. One is the general rule that when a plaintiff non-suits a case, that the defendant is considered to be the prevailing party. Under that theory, the landlord has non-suited the case, so my client would be the prevailing party. The second rule put forward is that when a tenant retains possession of the property, that they're the prevailing party. That's the council house rule, where the case, up until days before trial, the trial court asked for additional briefing on one of the tenant's defenses, and at that point, the landlord decided, we don't want to go forward anymore, we're non-suiting the case. Tenant kept possession. Tenant was determined to be the prevailing party. The third rule is the Green Depot rule, which is a little bit more nuanced, which says that the tenant prevails when the parties are left in the same position as they were, as if the case had never been commenced. The distinguishing factors in the Green Depot case deal with what got them to that point. There was a settlement agreement in Green Depot. The case went to a show cause hearing. The court determined that the case could proceed, but evidence wasn't sufficient to grant judgment for the landlord at show cause. It was set over for trial. Trial date was going to be after the tenant was scheduled to vacate anyway because the lease ended. So everyone agreed, if the tenant moves at the end of this lease, it's no longer an unlawful detainer. It's now only a monetary issue. And when the tenant, in fact, vacated, the case was dismissed. Given that settlement, I don't think that the Green Depot case is particularly useful for determining the prevailing party here. And I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
So perhaps when you come back up, you can talk about why the lease provision isn't superior to the rule about retention.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Donna Barnett for BTNA. And I first would like to clarify or correct some of the factual issues in the case regarding the three-day notice to pay or vacate. I think Formosa Brothers implied that they paid full amount within the 3 days, but it wasn't. It was late. BTNA personally served the notice to pay or vacate, so they had 3 days to pay. Formosa Brothers paid some amount, it's unclear whether that was the full amount or not, on the fourth day. Appropriately, BTNA rejected it because they were proceeding with, they were already in a lawful detainer at that point. Now, the only way...
Well, let me ask you some questions, and,
sure.
And I understand what you just said. I take it that there's no dispute that the May 10th, 2016 order is a timely appeal and properly before us.
That's correct.
Okay, and so That order basically is the underlying issue about whether or not it was correctly decided by the trial court that your client was the prevailing party under the lease, correct?
That's correct.
We have two cases out of Division I that say that where there's a CR 41A dismissal, the tenant is the prevailing party.
Right.
Why don't those cases control here?
Because the tenant was in a better position after, or was in the same position as when the landlord filed the case.
What case are you relying for that proposition to basically distinguish the two cases that I just talked about?
Well, both of those, for Green Depot, I think, is the most on point. In that case, there was a discussion between that there was a settlement. That settlement was not dispositive. What happened was the landlord and tenant appeared at a show cause hearing, and the tenant survived that show cause hearing and then later vacated. So the landlord was in a better position and was granted attorney's fees. In this case, BTNA filed this unlawful detainer. They eventually, after filing, paid in full $25,000, which BTNA had been pursuing for 2 years. They immediately paid in full. So therefore, again, Formosa Brothers is not in the same position because they're $25,000 lighter. So the lease says when a prevailing party is if the landlord receives money in any action under the lease. That's exactly what they sued for, and that's exactly what they got. Therefore, the landlord is in a better position, and the landlord prevailed.
Do you rely solely on Green Depot for your position?
No. Hawk is also in the record, and that was a residential landlord case. And I believe it wasn't a damages case. That was only it was an unlawful detainer based on disturbance of the peace and so they were trying to evict a tenant who was disturbing the peace. There was no money damages. So the tenant they voluntarily non-suited. The landlord voluntarily non-suited 5 days after they filed or so. There was a bunch of attorney's fees in that time. But again, the tenant was not evicted. There was no money exchanged. So yes, the tenant was in the same position and appropriately did get attorney's fees in that. This is not that case. If we change the facts, sure, and pretend that Formosa Brothers never paid their back rent, then prevailed on their motion to dismiss, then yes, they would be entitled to attorney's fees here. But they did not prevail on their motion to dismiss. That was considered and rejected. They did pay, and that's exactly what the unlawful detainer was filed for.
Any cases other than the two that you've mentioned on which you rely?
There are several in the record. Ben was more saying that the subject matter, they made the same argument that Formosa Brothers is here now, that the subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, that's ridiculous. Go ahead.
Okay. I hear that you want me to pull up another case.
No, I'm just asking you to.
There are several on the record, but I think Green Depot and Hawk are the most on point. And Green Depot clearly set the standard. Is the tenant in the same position? Yes, it wins. No, landlord wins. And here they clearly are not because they paid $25,000.
Well, if the landlord provides the 3-day notice and payment is made in full within the 3 days, mm-hmm. doesn't the tenant prevail?
In that case, that
no action could be filed because they've complied.
That's correct.
In this case, BNA filed prematurely because it hadn't given the 3-day notice prior to filing.
No, I disagree. We did give the 3-day notice to pay or vacate.
The problem was the insufficiency of the service.
There was a question as the sufficiency.
Well, there was an order. The April 12th order that says that service was improper under the governing statute. You have not appealed that order, so that's what we have.
That's correct. We did not appeal that because that was a harmless error. I think you will see there were several problems with that presented ex parte and over objections.
But the point is, you did not appeal the order.
Yes, I concede that. We did not appeal that, but again, it was if the landlord had paid, if the tenant had paid within the 3 days, again, they would not be in the same position because they paid. Now, the lease in our case is more broad, so it's not just do you prevail on an action or a proceeding filed in court. It's do you prevail in any action to get any rent. So in our case, I would say that the landlord would still be the prevailing party and would still be entitled to attorney's fees just for that drafting of the notice to pay or vacate. Then we're talking about a couple hundred dollars, though, instead of what we have here, which is purely based on Formosa Brothers' activity through the case. If they had not vacated and they had paid, we never would have filed the unlawful detainer. But we did. The court had clear subject matter jurisdiction under Carrara, and the judge could have dismissed it, but he didn't. And because he didn't, they paid. The case was still open. And again, BTNA wasn't even going to file for attorney's fees until Formosa did. This never should have gotten to the point it did, but there was no abuse of discretion. An abuse of discretion is the standard we're talking about here for attorney's fees. It's not de novo.
Well, it's awardability, so it's a de novo review. Abuse of discretion pertains to amount. Awardability is a legal question.
And there's no dispute whether there's on the basis of attorney's fees. I think the Formosa Brothers clearly said that they're not disputing whether the attorney's fees are whether a prevailing party should get attorney's fees. The only way they can win is if that April 12th order is under review. And the April 12th order is not under review here. It can't be because they didn't file in time.
If they paid the amount of rent due within the notice period,
yes,
they are a prevailing party because there was an action filed and it was dismissed. So you're disputing factually that they did that, but that determination is not under review.
It was an action filed, and they received payment. Therefore, they're not in the same position. So it's the standard is while they filed an action, and subsequently, if you look back and say that action was inappropriate because either the summons was not right or the service was incorrect. The subject matter is still there, and the effect of it is to put the landlord in the better position. And after 2 years of chasing the tenant to pay, they paid not within the 3 days. They paid after that and after we had filed the unlawful detainer. And Carrara, which you wrote, clearly states that the judge can do that. The judge can dismiss it, or he can keep it open. And that's exactly what he did, and there's no abuse of discretion for that. So if there's any other questions, I'm happy to answer, but if not, I'll end here.
Thank you. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. So, Judge Opelik, addressing your question, the impact on the lease is that this is an unlawful detainer. If the landlord had chose to bring an ordinary civil action, they wouldn't be placed under all the additional rules of an unlawful detainer. By choosing to use the method and the mechanisms of unlawful detainer to get the expedited review, to get before the court faster, you're in court in a week instead of months or years, or month or year in King County, you get expedited consideration. To take advantage of those, to enjoy the benefits of those procedures, the landlord must strictly follow the requirements of unlawful detainer. The central requirement of that is proper service of a valid notice to comply or vacate and waiting the necessary amount of time before commencing suit for that notice's period to lapse. When the landlord chose to bring an unlawful detainer to act under Chapter 5912 without meeting the necessary prerequisites of proper service and the proper waiting period for the notice, they brought an action, an unlawful detainer, that they were never going to be able to prevail in. They're never going to be able to get possession because they brought the action prematurely. That action means they cannot prevail. The lease provides for attorney's fees to the prevailing party. Because they could never prevail in an unlawful detainer, they cannot receive attorney's fees in this action. If they had brought a civil case and we got the same result, tenant pays landlord, landlord would be the prevailing party. But we have a different set of rules here because we're an unlawful detainer. With respect to counsel's comment regarding the compliance deadline in this case, if the notice had been served properly on March 21st, would have been 4 days. Because it was not served by hand delivery to an officer, agent, or person having charge of the business. The undisputed declaration is that the notice was hand delivered to Debbie, who's the daughter of the registered agent, who's not in charge. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes this matter. The